Betul and self-confidence, humility and the ability to assert ourselves. These are paradoxical states, and to get the balance right, we have to look at the secret of Behar B'chukaisai. The Rebbe has discussed numerous times that when two parishes are put together as one, the fact that we turn two parishes into one sedra, you split the two parishes over only seven aliyas. Not only that, but we take the end of the first sedra and the beginning of the next sedra, and we put them into a single aliyah, revi. With the same bracha before and after, implying that they're completely unified. That proves that indicates that these two sedras must have a very fundamentally linked common theme, which allows them to then to link up together. So now we've got the two parashiyas, Behar and Mechukoisai. What is their common theme that links them together? Because at first glance, it actually seems like they're contradictory themes. We've discussed many times, it's the shame, the name of the parasha tells us what the parasha is all about. At first brush, it would appear that the name Behar represents a completely opposite theme to the name B'chukosai. Behar means on the mountain. That indicates being elevated. What that implies is that there are times where a Jewish person has to walk with strength, with confidence, elevate themselves, illustrate that they are proud to be aligned with what Hashem wants. For example, when a person has a personal challenge, then the person has to stand up with strength, and even a little bit of azus, almost chutzpah, in order to overcome and not to be overwhelmed by the particular challenge, or as it says in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, brought in Shulchan Aruch, as kanomer, that we're supposed to be bold as a leopard. So that's the message of Behar, standing firm and strong. Whereas b'chukosakim from chukim, which illustrates the observance of those super rational mitzvahs, that's all about bittul, complete submission and surrender to Hashem. Chukim is memekayim defar. Why do we keep chukim, as Rashi describes? Vos chuka chokakti, gezera gozarti, because the Eibushter etched a rule into place and he made a decree. You don't even have authority, permission to think about what the significance of this particular mitzvah is, why we do it. That's what the Eibushter says. That's what we do. Despite the fact that we don't understand why we're doing it, and sometimes it even seems to be counterintuitive, irrational, and we do it anyway, complete acceptance. How then do we reconcile that Behar and Rechukosai, which seem to imply opposite messages, turn into a single seder? Vetmanes Vashem Bahakim Abir will understand that by first explaining in Demshem Asedor Hishena Litmini Gisroev Osterahi. Let's first go back to the first parasha and look at the name that was given to it by the Jewish custom, which is as good as Torah. Behar, on the mountain. Why do we say Behar, the mountain? We know which mountain we're referring to. Why not call it by name? The Lecheres Nebuman, it doesn't seem to make sense. The Adgosha is Doch Lecheres Nevorot Sinai. Surely the emphasis should be on the fact that it's Sinai. The specially selected mountain on which the Eibushter gave Torah, as Rashi says in the first Rashi, Sinai, or the Akopan and Behar Sinai. We should have called the parasha either Sinai or the full name, Behar Sinai. When we're given it by Noch Sedras, as their nomen is from Sveverta, it's not unusual. There are many other parashas that have a double name, Ki, Sisa, Lech Lecha, whatever it is. So we pass the nomen Behar, Vosoknit Vengle Velcha Haras Etzichta. How do we choose the name of the parasha being Behar, which is so generic, the mountain or a mountain, without specifying which mountain, which surely is the most important piece of information over here? The Steile is noch starker, and to expand this question, we know the lesson that we're supposed to derive from the specific mountain Sinai. Chazal Zogin, as the time was in a hot Uzgi given the Maharsinai, Dafka to given FM de Torah, as we well know, Medrash tells us that the reason that the Abish has selected Harsinai from all of the mountains is Vamochichim Kol Teraya, because it was lower than the other mountains, or more humble than the other mountains, as Nidariku from Alaberg, was Dos Tachin Zichadova Vyifuchai, which brings a paradox into the picture, mountain that is low. Von Hainzai, devices for Yastav Zain Shifus Mochich. On the one hand, Sinai is a sign of humility. It's a low mountain. Aber von der zweiten Seite ist eigentlich Sinai a Hart. But at the same time, it is a mountain. It's not a doormat. Weil auf, weil Pi, as es man sich von Aiden, nicht nur von Schiflus, to teach us the lesson that as important as it is for a Jewish person to have humility, Torah ist nicht sein, und nicht von Asim Zolverim, wir haben nach Skufa an Idresses, Chas Vishalem, that's not an excuse to become a Schmatter, a doormat. A Skufa an Idresses, the threshold that everybody just tramples all over. Together with our humility, we have to have the backbone to be able to stand up with pride and with strength, and sometimes even to be bold in order to facilitate what Torah mitzvahs require. Now, when you look at those two principles, Bahar represents the strength and Sinai the humility. Bahar vaistevis nasus v'tekefodam. The mountain is the part that speaks about standing up strong and proud. Mashenkin Sinai alone, whereas if you just have Sinai without the word Behar, need to unterstreichen dich dabei, as Zetzich wegen Ahar. If you're just talking about Sinai without reminding us and emphasizing that it is a mountain, Vaisefina Bittel. That illustrates the concept of submission. Because Sinai is Al Shem Hasneh, the Ramban tells us. That the reason it's called Har Sinai is because the very first appearance that Abishna made to Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu was on the Sneh, the thorn bush on top of the mountain. Well, Sneh, Shvalmi Kolaylon Ishwaylam, the Gemara tells us that the thorn bush, the Sneh, is the most simple or lowly of all of the bushes around it, and it's an indicator of, in fact, humility. So Sinai is humility, Har is strength, and almost a sense of self. Stachmoven. As von die zwei Nionen Agbor Bittel, is Ikamaila Bittel. So if you have two elements that you're supposed to focus on, two characteristics, the strength and self-assuredness of the mountain, or the Bittel of the snare, which is the primary, is Bittel. Not the bar, Barvontman, Aston, it's on Bittel, Kaskuf, and it dresses through here the Fuss. So we're told you have to focus on Bittel, and then you have to be sure that your Bittel does not turn into becoming a Schmatter. So therefore, occasionally, we have to be able to pick ourselves up with pride and with boldness from time to time. As the Gemara tells us famously, that the Talmud Chacham has to have 1/64th of ego, von gaiva, of arrogance, but not more than that, because the main thing is bittul. So in that context, why on earth would we choose to call the parasha Behar, which only speaks about lifting ourselves, in oislos and demikas sinai yobitol, and completely leave out what is actually the most important characteristic, humility. So once we answer that, we'll be able to understand the link between Behar and Bechul Koisai and their themes. Eina fundi biurim bozeh, one explanation is, the avoida fun bitol shifru sa'odam, how does a person get to see themselves as lowly and humble? It's vabunim mit gadlus hakel. It's in the context of understanding the infinite greatness of Hashem. It is bottle, vala filled, as the emissary says, for now, it says, elikus. Why does a person have bittul? Why does a person have extreme humility? Because we recognize that the only true existence is Hashem. On that far is the emissary bittul. And so therefore, this is really important, what is true bittul? And the head that I'm at says, if I say feel, is my filled, I feel in it as a misbottle. The ultimate state of bittul is where a person is so surrendered to Hashem that they're not even conscious of the fact that they are in a state of bittul. Because as long as a person is aware of the fact that they are surrendering to Hashem, well, that indicates that the person obviously still feels self, and therefore they are actively surrendering self to Hashem. The ultimate state of bittul is completely seamless. So for example, your hand moves with complete bittul to the rest of your body. It doesn't think, oh, I'm going to now listen to the brain. It's a seamless experience. As soon as the brain says move, it moves without hesitation, without even realizing. Ultimate bittul is not feeling I am bottle, but feeling there is only a bishter. And you'll see that illustrated in an area of halacha, an important area, which is the role of the eved versus the role of the shliach. But shengiret hamol barucha, there's a sich in chedek chofa, the Rebbe speaks in detail, in a chedek tzvishan an eved on a shliach, the difference between a slave and a shliach, an emissary, a proxy, an agent. Even though halachically a person's proxy is as good as themselves, in other words, when they act, they are acting as if you're acting. And that has levels to it, and we'll talk briefly about those levels. But the highest level of shlichus is, as the shliach, the highest form of shlichus is that at the time that the person is behaving, is acting as an agent for somebody else, they are technically that person in that particular scenario. Like, for example, where he gives the ring to the woman on behalf of the mishaleach. That woman is now as married to the mishaleach. So just to unpack this, the principle of agency has three possible ways that it could play out. Aleph, the lowest level is the shaleach, git reshus v'kech tzim shliach tzuton nipyol b'mkoymoy. I give you permission to act on my behalf. So I give you power of attorney. So now you can act on my behalf, you can make a deal on my behalf. You're my stockbroker. So here's the money. You can act on my behalf and decide which portfolio you're going to invest in. So you're the person, you're acting in your capacity on my behalf, therefore the actions are attributed to you. Beyond that is, then there's a higher level, which is, I'm empowering you to do something, so when you do it, nobody looks as if you've done it, they all see it as if I'm doing it. You are the agent that I'm using, but for all intents and purposes, it's as if I have done the particular role. So let's say, for argument's sake, we make somebody a shliach to go and, I don't know, put down a deposit on a property on our behalf. So there's no question about it that it's as good as if we put down that deposit. It's as good as if the property is ours. And then gimel as nit not diasias hashliach unzain kecha meise zainich zich misachas zum shaleach. The highest level is not only do we link this particular action not with the person doing the action, but with the person who empowered them or authorized them to do the action. But the ultimate stage is shluchei shaladon kemoisei mamash, where the person representing the mishaleach is for that activity in their shoes, literally, completely their representative. So even at that highest level of performance, where the shliach is kemoisei de'amishaleach, like literally as if it was the mishaleach, we could still separate them as two different entities. That's why the language is, there is an agent who is like the sender. And that's only that the person is like the sender in the context of the specific agency that they were given. But even at the same time, they are not like me in any other area. So I may have multiple things that I'm trying to do, and that's why I've delegated one of them to you. So you're like the mishaleach in that particular area, and nothing at all in another area simultaneously. Now, an eved is a completely different story. The definition of a slave is somebody who has no independent personality. As long as he is the slave, his entire being is defined as the being of the Adon. That's why the halacha is, whatever an eved acquires automatically belongs to the owner because he doesn't have any independence whatsoever. Because the definition of a shliach is an independent agent working on your behalf at various levels. And the purpose of the shliach is to put aside their own personal interests for the mission. And that obviously applies during the duration of the mission. So even when the person is 100% representing you, it is still them representing you. An eved doesn't have to go through a process of saying, I submit to the authority of my master. He's literally chattel. He's literally the property of his owner, of his master. And therefore has zero independence at any level. From that we can extract that when a person has true surrender and submission to Hashem, isn't it considered to take a vagbar? That is dafka the person who can actually stand with, can assert themselves, can stand with pride, can be bold. But it's not a take a vagbar from saying metzias because it's not my personal ego. No, the take a vagbar from elikus because that individual is completely transparent and it's only Godliness shining through them. Therefore, when they stand up with strength and with with boldness and even audacity, it's Davishness. So when Moshe Rabbeinu says, Korach, what you're doing is completely wrong and there's going to be consequences, he's not speaking because he's defending his position. That is Davishness shining through, and therefore he can say, speak with absolute authority and with strength and assert himself. And that's similar to what the Gemara tells us, that the slave of a king is royalty. The fact that the slave is royalty doesn't make the Eved now walk around strutting his stuff, thinking that he's a big deal. Because he has no greatness of his own. He's purely just reflecting the king's greatness into the world. On that far, now that we have that information, we can understand why the parish is not called Bahar Sinai, but Bahar. Because the ultimate state of Bittul is when a person is in the state of Har, mountain, elevating themselves. Standing with strength, standing with a sense of pride. We don't now have to protect the space by ensuring that he is informed by holiness and that he's not corrupted by his own ego. Because this is somebody who is so absolutely submissive to Hashem, that the consideration of self never entered the equation in the first place, never thought about himself. So we don't have to spell it out and say the only reason he is entitled to stand up with such strength and such conviction is because he actually has Sinai dedication to Hashem. We don't have to say that because it wouldn't have entered our minds that this person would have anything but dedication to Hashem. On dos is eich debir b'avod ruchnis from the kamei fanuvim and kamei torah zayin Har Sinai. And that's actually why it is that Har Sinai could be described in a number of different ways. When a person begins their spiritual journey, and naturally at the beginning of a spiritual journey, we're very conscious of self. At that point, the focus has to be Sinai, work on developing humility and bittul. At that stage, there's no scope for any self-elevation. Like the beginning of Pesach, you cannot have any chometz. It's the beginning of the avodah of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, merit bittul alein, you can only allow in absolute submission to Hashem. Because a person in the early stages of their self-development is not yet submissive to Hashem, we dare not allow any inflation, any elevation. Because if we do, it will all be predicated on self, and it will be therefore self-interested, arrogant, etc. And that's similar to the first type of shliach we spoke about. The shliach is a metzius le'atzmoi. The shliach is completely independent of the mishaleach. But this person is able to let go of self in order to be the representative and agent for the mishaleach, so that they can achieve the mission properly. Then a hachra ifen is Har Sinai. So then you get to a point where you can add in the word har. The person is now healthier, they are more committed to the Eibishter, and therefore they can allow in a sense of self, not about themselves, but a sense of standing up for what they believe in, sense of pride in their Judaism. Because this person is now sensitized to the fact that I'm not standing up for me, I'm standing up for the office that I represent, I'm standing up for the God that I represent. But that person still needs the word Sinai tacked onto their title to remind them that they have to have that bittul. And that will protect the person not to fall down the slippery slope of arrogance. Because this is a person who hasn't yet been absolutely fully integrated into the world of bittul. Held by the dagger of Oser, filled noch via zich mevatul tzimavish, and that's the person who feels I am bottled to Hashem. And that is similar to the high levels of shlichus. Okay, I'm relinquishing my own actions so that they become considered like the actions of the person sending me. Or even better than that, shluchoi, who has an identity, is completely representative of the sender. As mentioned before, there's still the possibility of seeing the independence of the shliach from the mishalech, because there is still the possibility of developing some sense of self. The highest level of absolute commitment to the Eibishter is Bahar. This person is so absolutely committed and surrendered to the Eibishter, you don't even have to remind them Sinai. There is no possibility, no option, no thought process that there may be anything else except the Eibishter. That's Bahar. So Bahar, which we thought initially represented some sense of self, some sense of Yeshus, is the exact opposite. It's where the person is absolutely transparent, and therefore whatever strength and whatever conviction and whatever pride they have is purely the Eibishter's. Afal pi hasdinim from Bahar is gora hechadagim bittul. Now it's very clear that to achieve this level of Bahar is an incredibly advanced level of bittul. Sapayro fayed nidin bavidosoi. It's still a lesson for every single one of us, no matter where we are on our spiritual development path. Because if you really had to get to the essence of who we are, every single Jewish person is royalty, and the reason for that is because we're absolutely one with the Eibishter at our core. When we insist that a Jewish person has to be very strong and committed in an area of Judaism, it's not that we're like pressuring the person, you've got to have this bittul because we need to protect you from something negative, and the only way to do it is absolute bittul. Now, the steiger Gufa is we plims to take a fanefshali kiss was a chelikal kami mal mamish. Instead, we're recognizing that internally, intrinsically, the Jew has this absolute strength because the Jew fundamentally inside is a piece of Eibishter and therefore has no capacity for anything other than what the Eibishter wants, and therefore standing up with the strength of the Eibishter without a sense of I'm a big success story. I daf wissen. As in neshama fun ha'iden, so we have to know very clearly, as the Friedrich Rebbe told us, that our neshama sot men in golus nit fatriben and in shiv malchus nit ibegegeben was never sucked into or stuck or subdued by the golus experience. On vas is negeir zu teirum mitzvahs from minhagi Yisrael, aber in mi'iden if sich nit kein deyazager. When it comes to the fulfillment of mitzvahs, when it comes to learning Torah, even when it comes to minhagim, there is no force in the world and there's no opinion in the world that can influence our dedication. It is absolute. Dina de Malchus, Dina, yes, there's a principle that we have to respect the law of the land. When Alt is Garib Goy Cotton, and we shouldn't start issues with the nations, true. But when it comes to an issue of Judaism, we are royalty. We belong to the king. To the contrary, not only do we have the authority or the strength of a king because we're part of the royal family, but more than that, as a representative of the king, we do not have the right to relinquish our own, or the Eibishter's, honor. Kvoida Malchus. For Melech, Malchi HaMelech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the honor of the ultimate king. Because the Eibishter said, I live and dwell inside you. What does it mean, dwell inside you? That you have this neshama, which is a chedek elikal, literally a piece of Hashem's essence. That's what Bahar represents. The complete dedication to the Eibishter, which lies within every single one of us, and therefore we should be afraid of absolutely nothing in the world that contests our Judaism. Now it's actually fairly easy for us to link how Bahar and Bechul Koisai go together and actually become a single parasha. Because the Tzvei Tenuos in Avoida, these two approaches of Avoida, Vosverin Ares Gebrachni Dinem and Bahar, Tekef Is Nasus, and Bechul Koisai Bittul, expressed in the names of these two parashas. Bahar, which is to stand with pride and with strength of our convictions and with the willingness to assert ourselves. And Bechul Koisai, which is the Bittul, to accept the mitzvahs that we don't and will never understand. Those are not in contrast to each other. They're completely directly related. The one is an outgrowth of the other. Vegret Frir. Is a takeif is nasavach of ergemein mit Bahar. When we use the word Bahar, what kind of strength, what kind of elevation are we talking about? Ateitzof from bitul amiti, where the person has absolute bitul, therefore they are strong in the extreme, and therefore they can stand up with absolute strength and pride. As mentioned, this is the kind of bitul which doesn't even entertain the possibility of an alternative. As the Eved is Mitzias Adon, there is zero question about the fact that to be an Eved is to be one with the Master. To be a Yid is to be one with Eibishter. And where will you see this in practice? When we fulfill mitzvahs as they are chukim, which means more than just simply mitzvahs that we don't understand. The Alter Rebbe tells us the word chukim is also related to the word for engraving. So it's not just doing a mitzvah despite my lack of understanding, but it's having the mitzvah reality engraved into my reality. What's the uniqueness of engraved letters? So everybody says, okay, because the letters are one with the material on which they have been engraved. The truth of the matter is, it's beyond that, because even when you write ink on parchment, still, even though the ink and the parchment are separate from each other, but when we look at it, it's a single entity. It's a book, or it's a scroll. When you engrave something, the letters are actually non-entities. They're space. The whole, what makes the letter, is the material that the letter is engraved into. But dogmas wie die ganze Metzius von dem Allah verchule von der Luchas haben, is given the Eben von der, sorry, the Luchas ha-Eben, is given the Eben von der Luchas, as we see from the Luchas. What is the reality of the letters? The Aleph of Anoichi is what? It's stone. The stone of the Luchas. On dos is the diak in dem nomen chukim, and that's why we call them chukim. Afile de gabe gezeres v'chayotze b'zeh, and why we choose that name over a name like gezeres, which is decree, which also shares the message of doing what the Eibishter wants, even if it doesn't make sense. Because gezeres meint as the king for the mitzvahs v'ketom b'toich kviya. A decree is something you do because you have to. A davsich brechen, and ton amaisa v'zotnik in time. You have to unfortunately surrender yourself to do something which doesn't make any sense to you. But when you have the word chukah, which is also related to the word for engraving, that indicates us is nitok and shum kfir ban kiram hamitzvah. I'm not doing something because I'm being compelled to do it. The other is bottom tachlitz from Eibishter and is nitkemetzias leatzmai. I'm doing this because I'm one with Eibishter. I'm not independent from Eibishter. V'yoses hachukah is in an even tov. My reality is like the engraving in a precious stone. I am precious because I'm engraved, so to speak, into the Eibishter. So I do what the Eibishter wants, not because I have to force myself, not because I have to submit to a high authority, because this is who I am in my essence. And that's why, going back to what we already quoted before, that Rashi tells us that when it comes to chukim, it's very interesting language that Chazal use. You don't have the right to think about it, to question it. Should have just said simply, don't question it. Don't second guess it. Ein lecha reshus, you don't have the permission. Shlomo de Birbo's explanation is, ein lecha reshus lahar achre is madgish. When we use the expression that you don't have permission to second guess or to question, that implies as bechval daf ben zayne maharer, tzazame mitober nochtem naise daf zaynish vevenovin. That's telling us that actually the correct way that a Jewish person is supposed to behave is not just to accept everything on faith, but to think and to question and to understand. There's a nase, true, commit ourselves to do, and there's a nishma, understand what we're doing. We need to have a drive and interest to understand the reasons behind the mitzvahs. But in this particular area, you're not authorized to think beyond the what you're told to do and start to ask why. Das Seichel und das Seis Nutzen. In other words, the message is you have Seichel. You're expected to use the Seichel. Aber in dem Sug Mitzvahs, aber dir nicht gegeben, Schuss lahar achre. It's just that in this particular area of Mitzvahs, you're not permitted to apply your Seichel to try and decode these particular Mitzvahs. On euch in dem es menschel no lahar her. And it's interesting that we don't say don't learn about it. We say don't ruminate over it. Don't think about it. Don't second guess it. When a person is fulfilling the chukim, that doesn't mean to completely reject all intellectual process, all study, all investigation. So have a look and you'll see the various commentaries on chukim, and you'll see that they explain why these are not necessarily rational mitzvahs. How some of these mitzvahs are actually against the rational mind. So that shows you that you're supposed to think about it. You're supposed to query it. You're supposed to discuss it. You're supposed to explore it. The word mahara over here doesn't mean not to give it any thought. It means not to question it, like the expression maharach rabba, your person who second guesses the rebbe. Maharach hashchina, a person has doubts about the shchina, about the Eibush's way of running the world. Nitrachten as dos is achesorin in chukam legabe mitzvah sichlias, and in specific, not to think that there is any lack or any downside to a mitzvah that doesn't have a rational basis. Vadrabba, not only is there no downside, as we've illustrated, chukah comes from that word to engrave. When the as is by M in an ufen fun chakika, when a person has reached the point that their bittul to the Eibishter is completely engraved into their reality, it's absolutely clear to them that there's nothing else besides the Eibishter. Like mentioned, where the letters of the luchos actually part of the stone. Well, if that's my reality, and I know that there's nothing else besides the Eibishter, then my own seichel and my own sentiment is in no way a contradiction to the Eibishter and to my bittul to the Eibishter, because it's not about me. Because the person has reached a point where they're no longer considering themselves as an independent entity. Whatever they're experiencing, whatever they're expressing, is Eibishter. And that would also explain why a big chunk of the parasha B'chukosai is about reward and consequences, which doesn't really seem to fit the message of B'chukosai. It seems a bit odd. What are chukim? Why do you do chukim? Because the Eibush said so. You don't understand it. You don't get it. You don't appreciate it. We don't understand the purpose. We don't see the value. So, a parasha. That's all about doing what the Eibush wants out of absolute dedication. That's the parasha that should tell you what you get as a reward for fulfilling the mitzvahs. And that's the parasha that should describe the consequences if we ignore the mitzvahs. What would we need this incentive in order to get a person who's doing something out of a perspective of chukim to do it better because what? Because they're going to be rewarded? Is the beer in them explanation is when a person has that true bittul to the Eibishter, where they are literally like a stone engraved with the Eibishter's word. As in the token Zachary Selikos, there's nothing besides the Eibishter in their reality. But Yosef Hakik of Ozan and Atel from the Mevan Tov, like letters that are part of the precious stone. Then the rewards are also not add ons, they're part of my reality. The fact that a mitzvah produces a benefit, Shafnit by mention a gefil von Tona mitzvah to lub zich und sein Schreibet Eles, is not going to motivate me now to want to do the mitzvah so I'll get the benefit. That I'll have some goodness, whether it be material or spiritual. This is a person who only feels that the only value that exists is the value of Elikos. So happens, because the Eibush is ultimate good, so naturally, if the Eibush is absolute good, naturally whatever the Eibush is involved in, or whatever we do that is connected to the Eibush, is going to bring us goodness. And that translates into physical goodness as well. So the physical goodness is not a carrot on a stick to motivate me to do what the Eibishter wants. It's an expression of the fact that there's only Eibishter. Not only is the Eibishter in the spiritual realms, there's only Eibishter. And therefore, connection to the Eibishter is obviously going to bring bracha. And Mitzvah Hashem should bring us all bracha in our lives. And the ultimate bracha with Mashiach now.